Surprise, let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some arse.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma, Stephen and Kristen, proudly sponsored this month by our friends at the Dolphin Theatre. Head to dolphintheatre.org.nz to see their great lineup of shows coming up. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and check us out on Spotify. Tonight we're joined in the studio with the team from the musical Carrie, about to open at the Playhouse Theatre in West Auckland. Then artist Tebson joins us to launch their latest track, Decadence. Now to kick off the show today, all over my social media feed this weekend, I have been getting jealous because I didn't go to Sydney to see Phantom of the Opera on the waterfront outside the Opera House with literally cranes flying the chandelier in. So here is the title track from that fabulous show.
In sleep he sang to me, in dreams he came, that voice which calls to me and speaks my name.
If only we'd won lotto and gone over there.
I would have loved to have seen that.
But we saw something equally entertaining yesterday, probably quite not quite Phantom standard, but a few weeks ago we interviewed the team from Dolphin Theatre and we went along to Every Brilliant Thing, which was very different.
It was really different, and it was even more different. So it being a one-person show, bringing in some audience members, yet seeing it a one-person show as a matinee is really different because when you see it at night, they could do more with the lighting, there'd be more ambiance.
Because this was in the foyer of the theatre, it wasn't in the theatre itself. Yep.
but it was, yet it was really, really interesting because and though a sad premise, right, about the mom, you know, having some difficulties and the main character having their own difficulties, but telling the story, I could picture myself in the hospital lobby, in the support group, in all of these different kind of scenarios when you go with this character from seven to adult, and I could picture them as that age and then sitting in those different places. It was heavy, yet I found some hope in it.
Yeah.
And I thought, and our, and all audience participation, we all got to participate a little bit.
We did, and very safely done, you know, which was something they pushed, that every single audience member is involved in the show in some way, which doesn't appeal to a lot of people, but only four ended up on stage. Everyone else, it was just something from your seat, which was really nice. Yeah, that was very, very clever. Yeah, very different. Well done. Well, just well done for someone doing something different too. And that was the comment a couple of audience members said to me. So cool to come along to something just so left field, out of the box, literally. And that was great. So well done.
Yeah.
The first of many. And thank you, Dolphin. We've come to the end of the March. End of March. You've been our fabulous sponsors that keep us on air and paying our broadcasting fee. Thank you very much, Dolphin Theatre. Now, last week we talked a lot about the Bad Jelly the Witch. And Emma's had her team on here. She's away tonight. She surprised some guests, some past students of hers down the South Island with, at a show last night. Bad Jelly the Witch, of course, she's trying to do this from a professional angle. They had their Boosted campaign, which you head to thearts.co.nz now, not Boosted itself, or chuck Bad Jelly Boosted in Google, it will come up. She's so close. She's at 93%. She's only got 3 days left to go. You have to raise the full amount to get the money. That's the key with Boosted. Otherwise, it gets returned back to the people who sponsored. So please, listeners, if you're listening live or during the week, jump on to thearts.co.nz. Let's see if we can get her from that 93% to 100%, because she certainly works very hard in the arts world for many of us.
And it's on the podcast too, so if you want to go back and listen to last week's and be inspired and listen to some of the artists and Emma, it was so compelling. I was like, I think I want to go see it. It'd be something that I would think about. But so if you need a little boost to help boost, go listen to it.
Absolutely. All right, first up tonight, we are welcoming into the studio some good friends of ours from West Auckland's Playhouse Theatre. A big welcome to the team from Carrie. And we have Matt, the director. We have Billy, Hyatt and Gio, who are all playing different roles that they'll tell us. Welcome, team. Great to have you here.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
It's great to have you here. Welcome back, Matt. You're no stranger to the arts world and to many of our different radio shows here at Planet FM. So tell us, Carrie, is it based on the original movie and story that everybody will know, or is this quite an adaptation?
It's pretty similar to the original Stephen King film and the original book, actually. There are slight adaptations. The music is different from the original Broadway. So the original Broadway show only opened for, I think it was about a week before it got shut down.
Why? Ooh, it feels scandalous.
There was scathing reviews of it. Oh. People hated it. And in one of the moments, they had a very, very close call with an actor almost being crushed by set.
Ooh.
But it lasted about, I think it was like four or five shows on Broadway. They shut it down, and then in 2012 they did a revival, and that's the version we're doing, which is now the common version that is licensed out. It's pretty similar. We're taking a slightly different spin on it, whereby we're not focusing too much on the horror aspect of the show, but instead taking a larger emphasis on the social dynamics that are faced within the show, the life of what it's like to be a young person growing up in a small town.
So unpack that story for anyone that has never seen the film, knows nothing about it, you want to get them along to see it. What is the story about?
Story of a young woman, Carrie White, sort of that 17-year-old age, and it follows kind of her life through, looking through her life in the lens of all the social dynamics they have at high school. You've got the bullies, you've got the cool kids, you've got the nerds, you've got the quiet ones, and Carrie's sort of that classic misfit in a small town. You know, it's set in Chamberlain, Maine. The real Chamberlain, Maine, I think, is a city of about 50 people, small town America. Comes from quite an abusive household. The mother's quite a religious fanatic. There's a lot of both physical and mental and verbal abuse at home. And it sort of follows her life as she discovers she has telekinesis. and a number of kind of special powers, and follows the life of a number of different characters, which you'll see some of you, you'll talk to some of them shortly, follows their kind of individual storylines of, again, what it's like being a teenager at high school, and it kind of accumulates all up into this big moment at the end of the show where Carrie is tricked into being taken to prom, and there's kind of a big reveal of, you'll have to come and see what happens, but sort of the whole world burns around her.
Literally. Okay. Yeah. Well, Kristen, after a very tough matinee yesterday on a show about suicide, then decided to go home and research Carrie and watch the film again. What was that like for you, seeing it again after all these years?
It was interesting because I would pick up on, because I haven't watched it since then. Like, that was when we watched it, and I'm not going to talk about my parents making good choices of, you know, us seeing those movies. I had two older brothers, so I was allowed to sneak into some other ones. And I remember being frightened of it. So watching it again and then looking into the musical, it's a different perspective because I'm that further away from high school and that further away from those kinds of situations. So I could look and see other relationships that I didn't necessarily think about, and reflecting on my own relationship with my mother after all these years. It's definitely not as volatile as it was in high school, so I'm grateful for that. Yet then researching the musical, I thought, this is really compelling, like really big. People were involved with the original one, then the story of it being adapted. I'm really excited to talk to all of you about the journey of it because it is very, crazy. I mean, it's a typical 70s horror movie. Now it looks campy to me, but when I was younger, very scary.
Do you think, Matt, people that loved the original movie will still see enough of what they like in the musical?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think there's something in it for everybody. Okay. I think it's one of those ones where even if you're not, you know, we're choosing to set the show in the early 2000s to resonate with the age group and the demographic that we are as cast, right? But I think even those that are older than, you know, our cast is all under the age of 30, even those in their 40s, 50s, there's still a lot there to kind of reminisce back on, reflect of your time at school. You will see yourself in some of these characters, whether it's good or bad. And the real ethos of the story really is life is a series of decisions, and decisions you make, sometimes you know what the outcome of them are, sometimes you don't, but they always have a way of coming back around and showing you what decision you made.
Ooh, okay. And Billy, you play Carrie?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so what's it like taking on such an iconic role?
I didn't really know it was iconic when I auditioned.
Yeah, yeah.
Had
you seen the movie before the auditions? Oh, wow.
I actually haven't seen the movie still.
Okay.
I read the book. But I didn't want to... I also read the script before I auditioned. I didn't want to, like, take
things from what everyone else had done.
I really wanted to be able to, like, make her my own character.
And what have you learned about her along the journey?
Oh, she goes through it. She's very strong. I think it's really interesting watching her, like, seeing what her coping mechanisms are and how they pop up in different situations throughout the show. I think there are definitely times where I've been like, oh, okay, cool, so she's saying this to, like, try self-soothe. And you see it, like, from, oh, that's because of this from earlier in the show, especially a lot with her mom. Yeah.
What's been the most challenging part of taking on Carrie?
Making sure that I leave it at the door when I leave rehearsal, I think.
I was going to ask, what's your safety mechanism? But you've just answered it, yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you have a ritual when you get out the door? Or?
We've all actually just started tapping in and out of rehearsals, which is really good. Yeah. It makes it a lot easier to be like, cool, I'm not that person anymore. Yeah. Mm.
We talked about a bit about that yesterday, didn't we? Just that importance for that, because of the storyline yesterday, that, you know, how do they switch themselves out after doing such a deep story? Yeah. Okay, so, Gio, who do you play?
I am playing Sue.
Who's Sue?
Who is Sue? Sue is one of the very popular girls at the school with Carrie, who decides it's fun to partake in a bit of the bullying and, right, and whatnot, which starts the story, pretty much.
So you're not a nice person?
To begin with.
Okay. You go on to a journey.
I go on a journey, and, you know, it's all about coming back from that and trying to create a better outcome for all parties sort of involved. But I think as well, Sue really goes through it. I think the more we've gotten deeper into these rehearsals and really have been delving deeper into our characters, I've realised just how vulnerable I really have to be in this role.
Mm. And is that different to previous roles you've played?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I am comedic relief most of the time.
Yeah.
So, but it's been a great experience to just be able to completely, you know, show my colours on stage with Billy, because I completely let loose, honestly. But it's great, yeah.
Billy, what does Carrie think of Sue?
She's doesn't like her at first. I think she... I think we end with her still not really sure. It's hard because the audience obviously gets to see everything that Sue's going through, but Carrie doesn't see
that. Yeah, true. True, true, true.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice, yeah, nice understanding. Yeah. Hyatt, who do you play?
So I play Carrie's mother, Margaret White.
Okay.
She's a very layered character. I guess from someone watching Margaret and Carrie from an outside perspective, they would see Margaret as this crazy religious fanatic, completely psychotic, full control of Carrie. But the complexity of her character comes from her intentions behind that, where Margaret is, you know, a single mother. She has this past with Carrie's father that sort of, I guess, changes or like influences all her actions and decisions, and how she wants to be overprotective of Carrie through her religious beliefs. And there's just a big shift in her character when she starts to lose that control through Carrie gaining her telekinetic powers, right? And that big flip in Margaret's character has been a tricky one to navigate, for sure. But, yeah.
A bit different from your Evita journey,
I
think we last chatted.
Completely different roles, and completely different from any of the other roles I've done in the last year or so. Yeah, definitely one of those roles, as Billy has mentioned, is one you leave in the room. You don't take it out with you. Yeah.
Nice. Matt, what made you want to do Carrie? What stood out?
I think there's two things. One, the music is phenomenal. Listening to the soundtrack, it's one of those ones you listen to. I listen to it on repeat all day. Like, it's a beautiful soundtrack that I don't get sick of. I think the other one is, this is, for me now, the fourth show I've directed, but, I don't know, number 300 and something that I've been involved in. I wanted to tackle a conceptually and technically challenging task. I wanted to tackle a task that was not a light show. It wasn't a happy-go-lucky. It was, there's some real meat to it, and there's a challenge of working in the amateur space, of getting to work with actors and actresses who maybe have never gone that deep in a character before, and there's a lot of work to do there, and unravelling and helping them connect their personal lives to these characters in a safe and mature way, but really building something. And on the other side, with my background being more of the technical lighting and sound sort of side, something that was really exciting about the show is it's a technical beast, right? So you've got the big destruction at the end, but throughout you've got, you know, we've got upwards of 100 different sound effects running throughout the show. We've got some, you know, things we've never used before in theatre, where we're using entrances and exits that have never been thought to be used in our theatre before. A technically complex challenge, but also quite a conceptually a hard one to to do and a really fun journey along the way that allows me to kind of connect with cast beyond just being a director, but also connecting with them as people and helping them kind of tackle this challenge of some pretty tricky roles to take on.
Brilliant. And you've been part of the Playhouse Theatre furniture for a long time.
11, 12 years.
So you feel very much it's your space to work with, which I think helps rather than someone coming in from an outside and sort of, you know, you get your 4 days before the show opens to find the journey. Does that really help being that director that this is your home base?
I think so. I think it's two things. A, it allows you to kind of process and you don't stress. You know, like we're 2 weeks out from opening and sets only just started to be built today and props have come in and for some of the cast who haven't worked with us before, it's quite challenging. They're used to now being on a stage and performing under the lights and everything, and that's a learning. But I think the other thing is doing a complex show at a venue that is home.
Yeah.
I feel far less stressed because I know the people, I know what we're capable of, and I know the attitude that everybody in the team, cast, crew, band, production, everybody has is, we're going to figure it out.
That's so interesting. So now, Billy, from reading the book to then being in the musical, how did the music change the story for you and the experience that you're now bringing to the role?
I love the music in the show, and I think that I feel like everything is very perfectly timed with when there is music, and I would say that music is my first kind of thing that I connect with when I'm doing a show, so I felt like it was a really nice, easy way in. Well, not easy, but it was a good way to connect with the show because you can pretty much listen to the soundtrack and know the story. So you can get that connection without having your blocking or anything. You kind of know where you are and can start to do some of your character work through that as well.
Now, when there are movies, when there are groups of people that don't get along, then they have to, like, outside, sometimes act like they don't get along, right? They keep some of the actors away. They keep them at separate hotels. How is that working when you're leaving it at the stage and then being able to turn it off even though you might not be getting along on stage? Like, how does that...
Oh, there's a bit of a gap between crew and Harry here in the scene.
Look, I think we started with our music first, and everyone was just in there learning our notes, and we kind of went through the process that way. So I think that everyone got to know each other first really well before we were diving into the more tricky dynamics. So I think that was great because it created a really safe space to feel those vulnerable things and try things and figure out that it didn't really work, rather than staying in characters. Yeah.
Right. What about you, Wyatt? Have you ever played a mother figure? And what's that like, mothering someone who's close to your age?
Yes, this is definitely new territory. Because the nature of the show and how Matt has casted it, being a young adult musical with, you know, everyone under the age of 30, and Billy being pretty much my age, maybe a year younger, definitely never played a mother role. But it's been really interesting to tap into that as an actor and try to form that motherly relationship with Billy. It's been, navigating that through. We've had an intimacy coordination just recently as well. That was with a lovely lady, Lara. She really helped with that as well, just finding ways to have that sort of connection and still be genuine with it. Yeah.
All right, we've talked a bit about the music. Let's play a track from the show. And Matt, this track is called Carrie. When does this come in the show?
This is song number two.
Song number two, right up. The writers of the show, do we know them from other musicals?
We do, but I'm shocking with memory, so you couldn't ask me what music.
No, that's all right.
Yeah, they've definitely done stuff before.
Google or ChatGPT,
yeah.
All right, let's take a listen to Carrie.
You know what Norma calls her? Scary White. Do you love it?
Opening track there, Matt. Fantastic. How's your team sounding? Who's your musical director, vocal coach, and all of those important people?
Phenomenal team. So, working alongside Hamish Regan as our musical director, Logan Hunt is the assistant musical director, and Anya, I won't butcher her last name, as our choreographer. And I think the cast are phenomenal. I think they're better than the cast recording.
Nice.
We have got very clear distinctions from us in the cast recording. We haven't taken like a copy of what is. We've adapted the music to.
And that said it was the premiere cast. So, you know, often you see the original Broadway, West End, etc. So the premiere, so that was of the rewrite.
Yes, that was of the 2012 rerun. And I believe the full cast that recorded this recording weren't. There was a couple of cast members that weren't in the Broadway version. They got brought in to do the cast recording.
Okay. Now, Hyatt, you've got a very special fundraiser happening during your season as well. Tell our listeners a little bit about that one.
So it's a really awesome initiative that's been organised, sort of to tie in with the themes of the show surrounding Carrie having her period for the first time. It's called the Kindness Collective, and they are helping thousands of people have access to basic period products. So we are helping the Kindness Collective. There are two ways that audience members can help. When you book your tickets on Event Finder, there is an option to donate. And every contribution counts, you know, so even if it's just a dollar. Otherwise, when you do come to watch the show, you can drop off some period products, bring some pads, bring some tampons. Again, every little bit helps.
Fantastic. That's awesome. Thinking now about your own journeys in the arts, Billy, you kick it off. When did it all first start for you? Take us back. What was that first moment that you went, oh, I want to do theatre?
I auditioned for a show in high school when I was 14. So
okay, so 14. So, Kristen, we're ruling out the nativity show. We've had a run of nativity shows the last few weeks.
Though, you don't know.
Okay, okay,
right?
14, though. Oh, yeah, could be Mary.
Rock of Ages.
Oh, no.
Definitely
no nativity in that one.
A little
amazing.
Bit different.
Okay, so that first sparked some interest.
Yeah, and then I did a show, all the shows in high school, and then I got to uni and started studying and really missed music and really missed performing. So I studied classical singing and then did some shows while I was at uni, and then in my last couple of years just really focused on my degree, and then this is my first one back since graduating.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And where would you like to take it, given you've done all that training? You know, if we bring you back in 5 years' time, where will you be?
Maybe not in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to do postgrad study in the UK. I think that's a dream that if I don't try it, something I'll always regret. So that is definitely, hopefully, in the plans. Yeah.
Well, in a little while, we're going to play a track from Lisa Crawley, who is now making it big in LA, and I directed her as an Oompa Loompa in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory on the Playhouse Theatre stage when I think I was about 22. So she was younger than that and now doing amazing things in LA and is a regular on our show. So, you know, the sky's the limit. Yeah. But people come home. She came back, did a number of great shows back here a few years ago and then ventured off again. Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome. Gio, what about you? What first kicked it off?
I think it was 2005, so I was 6 years old.
here we go. This is closer.
I know, I'm the old one. Yeah. I started singing and taking piano lessons and really getting into the arts because it was a big thing for my dad, that he was like, I need at least one artsy child. I took that on. And I was based out in one of the community theatres out east and started doing their recitals and also watching a lot of the shows that they put on there, and I said, I want to do this. And then in 2007, I did Annie, and I was like, I think I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, which was going on track. And all through high school, I was doing 2-3 shows a year, as well as my school productions. And then took a 7-year hiatus after school. What a shame, I know.
And what called you back then? What was the show that brought you back after 7 years?
High School Musical.
Oh, no. Oh, no, let's end the interview.
I will say, because after school, I was in jobs that just didn't allow for the time.
Yeah.
And so when I finally went into a proper adult job that was 9 to 5, I said, I'm back.
Nice.
And High School Musical called my name.
High School Musical. Well, hey, if it did it, it did
well,
it.
Well, I mean, did it fulfill like a dream of yours?
Absolutely. Oh,
she was breaking free.
Well, I got to learn piano again and play that on stage. No. So that was really fun.
That's nice. Gorgeous.
Nice. Yes. I keep trying to convince theatre groups to do Beautiful, but you've got to have a good person who can play Carole King and play the piano. So
absolutely.
There we go. That's calling you. That's love calling that. You. Okay, I love it. So Carrie from High School Musical is quite a different vibe.
Such
do you
a
like
jump.
A mix in your life?
I really like Dark and Twisted.
Okay.
Anything that's a little bit rocky with adult themes definitely calls my name. I feel like I can really put myself into those shows. Majority of my dream shows are quite weird, but I love it because it's not that happy-go-lucky that people tend to be used to when they think of musical theatre. Like when I say to people, I love musical theatre, they're like, oh, you just like break out into song on stage, like dancing and tap. And I'm like, no, it's not always like that. I want to make you cry.
Yeah,
that's the goal.
I love those musicals that move you in that way.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about it here on the show, those ones that you get to the end and nobody speaks for a few minutes.
Love.
That to me is the biggest applause you can get, when audience actually just can't speak because they just need to take in what they've seen. No pressure. All right, good luck, guys. And Hyatt, take us back. When did it all first kick off for you?
Oh, I think I was dancing and singing out of the womb. Yes. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
I think my very first show, it was a ballet show. I was 5 years old as a little mouse in Cinderella. But obviously I've moved on from then. I did study music in university. I did, same as Billy, I did a Bachelor of Music, but I did mine in Waikato instead, classical voice. And I think once I finished and I was doing my jobs and things, I really wanted to go into theatre. It's always been a passion of mine. And you brought it up. Evita, I did that in 2024. That was my first leading role. And it's true that people say theatre is addictive, because this is my fifth show in a row now.
Yeah.
So since then I did vocal coaching Mary Poppins at Harlequin. I was at AMT's Merrily We Roll Along, did ensemble and alternate Mary Flynn for that one. Most recently, before Carrie, I did Hunchback at Playhouse as well. I was alternate Esmeralda. So you can see a very big variety of roles there, completely different from the psychotic Margaret White in this one. But I love what I do, and I always make the time for it, you know, and hopefully I can just keep jumping at these opportunities when they come.
Brilliant. Matt, I'm going to ask you a different question just to throw it. Instead of asking what kicked it off, I'm going to talk about the other thing, that you have multiple hats on at any given time that I know you. You've been running your own business. You're involved in neurodiversity with Parliament level. You're always teching and helping out. You're my fantastic lighting director on my next show. But also, in the mix of this, you've recently become the MTNZ zone rep for up this way in Auckland and north, just in your spare time. So my question to you is, why so much? How are you juggling? How are you looking after yourself?
Why so much? I ask myself that question every day. I don't know. You got to do something with your time. You might as well do something purposeful, meaningful. It's better than sitting at home. And it means that little bit of time that I do have it home, I spend doing the things I really enjoy, like Lego and things like that.
Nice.
You know, have your down moment.
That's your chill, yeah.
That's my chill moment. Love a bit of Lego.
Yep.
I think that's it. What do I do? That's, I guess, how I relax as well. Yeah. I don't know. I like to be busy. I don't like to sit around and do nothing. I started kind of my journey in theatre and work and everything back when I was like 14, 15. And ever since then, it's kind of been 7 days a week, 18 hours a day, go, go, go. And we'll rest one day. I'm a bit like you, Stephen.
Yeah, I know.
Got to do something.
Yeah. Tell us about the MTNZ role. What does that involve? Because you've just taken that on.
Yeah, just taken that on. Elected a couple of weeks ago. That's representing Zone 1 societies. So that's Kerikeri all the way down to Pukekohe. So there's like 13 to 15 societies across that region, plus a number of arts partners, education partners, other community groups. And my job is to sort of help facilitate discussion, connection, work with all the different societies to support them whatever way they can, and be a voice for that northern region on the executive level, which Emma is the president of, which is lovely, and work with other zone reps all over the country to kind of see what does the future of musical theatre look like in New Zealand, and what can we be doing kind of at a strategic level to support all those societies across New Zealand to keep doing the wonderful work that they all do.
Fantastic. That's awesome. All right, before we wrap, you guys, Kristen, is there a burning question from you, having just watched the movie yesterday, that you want to ask any of the cast?
I think I want to be assured that I'm not going to go away like sad or too sad. What would convince me to say I'm not going to be in a really bad place? Like, what could I look for in the play, maybe not at the end, but in the other parts, to say there's going to be these little pieces of hope, or if it's going to be glitter, or if it's going to be something that will then say, then I'll, it's okay if I leave one way, but look for these special parts in the play.
Yeah, there's some beautiful moments in the show. There's beautiful romance, there's connection, there's, you know, and the relationships, there's interpersonal between, you know, boy and girl couple relationship. There's beautiful relationship even between Carrie and Margaret, where you see the softer side, you see this, the desperation of a mother watching her daughter go out in the real world and kind of take flight on her own. And I think, even though by the end of the show, I believe a lot of our audience will end up in tears. It's a sad ending, and it's kind of a horrible way to end a theatre show. There is moments in there that I think everybody can resonate with and kind of take pity on those around them, but also gain a level of understanding of not everything you know, that first interaction you have with somebody and those moments you see, there's always something under the covers, right? Right. And finding those moments and having that kindness to go, I'm going to go a bit deeper on that person and really understand them and see where the intention is coming from. Sometimes the delivery is not there, but the intention is always there.
Right. Yeah. That's amazing. That's good, because not everything ends well. Yet, I guess this is part of the enjoy the journey part of it and not just the destination.
And I mean, you'll always walk away. The cast, both our lead cast and our alternate cast, are phenomenal. I wouldn't even call them an alternate cast. We've almost cast the show twice. I encourage listeners to attend both shows. It is two completely different shows. We have done it, staged it in a way where we've allowed two different shows to come to life.
So you have all the alternates on one time. Yeah.
All the alts on one time and all the leads on one time. And then our leads and our alts swap and they go into help beef out the ensemble and things like that. Oh, so nice. It's beautiful, nice. But yeah. It is two, we've staged it as two completely different shows. The blocking is different. The songs are different. We've tried our best to allow the actors and actresses the chance to really bring their own flavor to these characters, given the depth that they have to go to bring something out of this. We've really allowed them, or given them as much space as we can to really bring that to life in their own way without kind of trying to box them into something.
Amazing.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, we wish you all the best for the season. We're coming along. We're looking forward to seeing it. We've got the tickets. No pressure. Bring it all to life for us. Matt, where can people go to buy tickets? What's the season dates and all that important stuff?
Eventfinder. All online on Eventfinder. Similar to the Bad Jelly from before, if you just Google Carrie the Musical Playhouse Theatre, it'll pop up on Eventfinder. We open in 2 weeks from yesterday, so 11th, I believe it's the 11th of April to the 25th of April. 13 shows in there. We've got 4 alt shows, 9 lead shows, and for those that have people in your community, we also have a sign interpreted show on our first Sunday with the lovely New Zealand Sign Language team.
Amazing. Amazing.
Oh, and sorry, I've just been prompted. I forgot as well. The middle of our week on our Saturday, we have a beautiful prom dress-up night. So if you fancy coming out for a nice fancy dress night,
we'll be doing a prom
dress-up on that Saturday evening. We encourage everyone to dress in the sparklies.
And bring your period products or money to support them. Fantastic. Thank you so much, guys, for coming
on.
I appreciate it. You've had a really long day rehearsing and then coming to us Sunday night. Go well. Have a fabulous season. Matt, the song we're playing you out with is You Shine. Tell us a little bit about this one.
This is the beautiful love ballad, both of those, between two of our lead characters, Sue and Tommy, who you'll see have quite the little love interest in the show.
Fantastic. Here it is.
If you could see the way that you look to me, I bet that you'd be amazed at the sight. You'd see a heart that's fearless and true. From my point of view, oh, you shine.
What about you? Why is everything so easy for you?
Man, if you only knew. Half the time I'm just faking and hoping no one will discover I'm a complete fraud.
I think you hide so much you feel inside, but I know deep down there's a fire burning bright. From where you stand it might not be clear, you shine from here.
No doubts, no more fears.
See you shine and the dark disappear.
tears, then I know everything is gonna be fine. Because you shine, oh how you shine. You shine.
What a surprise, gazing into your eyes. I swear that I still get lost in the light. No photograph could possibly show. I see you shine and the dark disappears. I'll be your mirror and you can be mine. Look to me and you'll see just how you shine.
Damn, I gotta pick up my tux before they close.
Tommy, thank you.
I love you.
You. He'd never said that before. That's what I remember most about that day. No doubts, no more fears. I see you shine and the dark disappears. Then I know everything is gonna be fine. Because you're
You Shine from Carrie the Musical. Well, Kristen, it'll be interesting to go along and see that and compare since you've just watched it.
I can't wait. I really am intrigued. I was kind of on the fence thinking, do I really want to do that to myself? Yet after, I always get so excited to meet the performers and the artists, and then I just think, I could do this, and then I feel like a really good connection, and then I would feel more safe to go to something like that because, you know, scary is scary, but I feel okay. Like, oh, I trust these people now that I've met them and talked to them, and they're so beautiful.
I've never been a fan of horror movies. In fact, my problem is I tend to get the giggles. Do you remember what was the one, the very first one that came out, set in a forest with a handy cam?
Oh, the Blair Witch Project.
Blair Witch.
That's the first one you saw?
No. So when that came out, and there was a big premiere in Auckland, well, I got the giggles. And the giggles got a little bit contagious, and all these people started sort of giggling. I just thought it was hilarious. It was so bad, it was hilarious. I got removed from the theatre. I'm quite proud. I've never been removed from anything in my life.
Steven.
Security came in and removed me because evidently my laughter was disturbing the premiere.
Oh.
And I would literally was like, I'm sorry, I thought it was meant to be funny. Like, I thought it was meant to be a bit of a piss take.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we've invested a lot into this premiere. And I was like, oh. See, I got kicked out of the theatre. Yeah. But my wife used to love watching horrors just before bed. But then she would have the world's worst nightmares. Like, we would be in bed and I would wake up to her literally being chainsawed beside me. She is dodging the chainsaw, landing on me. I'd be like, what's going on? And I'm trying to gently wake her from her sleep as she is literally being massacred in the bed. And then suddenly she would just roll over and go back to sleep. I'm now wide awake for the rest of the night because the person beside me has been chainsawed.
Yeah.
That was quite an experience. It took quite a bit of coaxing that maybe a bit of YouTube and musical theatre before bed might be a safer bet than watching a horror.
100%. I think I love 80s horror because it's campy.
So anything
before that, a little bit too gruesome. Anything after that, way too gruesome.
Yeah.
But my safe space is 80s because it does make me laugh. I remember I saw Nightmare on Elm Street and I was very nervous to go, and I ended up just really thinking it was hilarious. And now as I watch them again, I think, oh yeah, no, these are really good. Mm. But that's about it. I could peek at 80s.
Brilliant. Mm. All right, well, a total change of scene now, although just the intro says sad girl pop, so maybe there is a bit of a theme in the vibe, the space tonight. A big welcome to the fabulous artist Tebson. Welcome to Kick Arts.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. And you're no stranger to music, but you're going out on your own now.
Yes.
All right. So take us back. Tell us, when did music sort of first kick off for you?
I have memories right back to being 2 or 3 and listening to whatever album my mum or my dad put on at full volume and rocking on my rocking horse too. I have very significant memories of that. And then around the age of 5, I'm a 90s baby, so Top of the Pops. And I just remember watching them every week on a Sunday and all of the matching dance moves and the catchy songs, and I just wanted to be like them. And kind of just developed from there. Started writing poems when I was 8, put them to music when I was around 13, and never stopped.
That's cool. And your journey in music when it came to sort of performing, you headed down like the band path. Did that kick off in school?
No, I was, I did solo in school, so just kind of piano and myself. I didn't dabble with band stuff until 2016 when I formed my band False Heights, and then kind of went down that pathway.
So tell us about False Heights.
So False Heights, I had with my ex-husband Ashley, and we had a lot of fun navigating the music industry. We kind of started off a little bit more pop rock and then made our way towards pop punk and quite heavier music, and it was fun. We did some awesome shows. I got to open for ZZ Top and Pat Benatar a few years ago. That was really amazing, and did R&B and all those sorts of things. And it's always like awesome writing music with other people and performing with other people, but it's quite exciting at the same time to return to solo with everything that I've learned from managing the band, and being able to kind of just be selfish, I guess, and really just focus on creating a project that is the art the way that I see it, and seeing what is that. Is it even any good, or do I need to be collaborating as a band?
Or can you do both?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we have a lot of artists on here that have their, well, a couple recently have had their sort of two track names. There's their band name that they sing with, but then their solo artist name. You know, is that a path that you could look at?
Yeah, potentially. It's definitely something that I'd be interested in exploring at some point going forward, because the more variety you can have as a performer, the more you can learn, and the better you become. Like, the what you learn from one project can cross over into another project, and I think it gives an artist an edge when they have that variety. Definitely.
Is this something that, and I always call it self-full, right? Not selfish. This is something that you are, you know, filling yourself. Are you going back to your roots after this part of, being part of a band, going back to maybe when you first started writing poetry and putting music to it? Mm. Is this kind of a journey back to then move forward again?
Yeah, definitely. I like that. Soulful. That's cool. Self-full, sorry. Definitely. I have always leaned towards using my songwriting to write, I guess, sadder, or to work through. I want to say negative, but I don't really think of any emotion as a negative thing. I'm definitely working with the inner child in me and what the 6-year-old April would want to be, like how she would see herself as a pop star, and then taking underneath that all of the things that I've learned over the years as I've grown up. But definitely going back to that girl in high school who used to just sit and play with her piano and her poetry. Yeah.
I think that's one of the most healthy journeys that anyone can take, is to go back and figure out what, 4, 5, 6, whatever that, golden age was, and start doing those things again to heal whatever happened in the middle, or even maybe what was happening at that point. So I think that is a beautiful journey. So the journey from, would you say, like pop to punk, or did you say pop to punk, how was that journey, and was that part of the reason possibly why you then said, well, I want to do some of my own stuff?
I don't think it's I would put them that hand in hand is like there's like two versions of me, I suppose. There's the little me who was just mainstream pop. I was all about the top 20 growing up, right up until I was about 12, 13. And then in year 10 at school, one of my friends turned up to homeroom and she had a USB and some burnt CDs, because this was I still had a CD Walkman back then, and she plonked them down in front of me. She said, "You need to broaden your horizons. Listen to this." And it was three of Jimmy Eat World's albums, and then a USB full of like Paramore and all of those sort of emo pop punk bands. And I was just hooked. And then around that time, that's when Evanescence were like releasing their debut album, and Avril Lavigne had been out for a couple of years and was still quite skater punk, and it was like these strong female mainstream people that I could relate to, and I did very much. So there's two elements to me, I guess, and so I love the pop punk. And if you watch my live performance, you can hear that in my vocals. But yeah, definitely just feel like I haven't itched the pop kind of itch, I guess, scratch the itch is what I'm trying to say. Oh my goodness, get your words out. Yeah, so kind of just going down there, and it honestly wouldn't surprise me if over the next few years Tebson molds into moving towards a more rocky sound, because it is a natural thing for me to do. Yeah.
Do you think over time you may add others into your music or certain songs, but still under this name?
Yes, yeah. I would like to aim towards touring with a full band, definitely.
We're going to play a track shortly, but how many are sort of in the works at the moment?
So I've got 5 tracks recorded.
Okay.
Yeah, so a few singles this year with a little EP, and then I'm aiming to go into the studio later in the year to record more music to flow on for next year, so that's the plan.
And what's your process for writing? Like, are you somebody, or we had someone recently that had to pull the car over and sing into her phones because it had entered her head. Like, what's your sort of style or process?
I can relate to that. I've got over 1,000 voice memos in my phone that I would hate to go through all of.
I have too, but they're all of the neighbours, so I can tell the property manager, listen to what they're doing.
Stephen!
Oh, I love that. So I'll do that, but I normally sit down at my electric piano, and I'll have a feeling, normally a kind of heavy feeling, and I'll have an idea of what I want to say, and normally I will pick a chord structure, whether it sticks to that chord structure or not, that feels like the feeling I'm feeling, and then I'll flow the lyrics and the melody from there, and that's kind of my starting point. Some songs will just flow. It's quite rare. I've got a couple of songs where they kind of were birthed and that was them, and then a lot of them will develop over time as I explore the scenario or the emotion more deeply.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Now, in this modern world of social media and everything, how are you getting your music out? So I've talked on the show a lot in the last few weeks. The amount of people that are sending me songs through Instagram, etc., or are now just appearing in my feed. Lovely Apple Music's decided that I like to hear new music, so it's constantly playing me new artists that I screenshot while I'm driving so that I can remember later to look them up for the show. What are you doing to get in that space?
Well, I have a distribution company that puts my music out there. Really, it's just sharing. Like, Instagram is my main focus of social media, because I learned from my band False Heights to not try and do something that feels uncomfortable to me, and Instagram is my safe social media platform. It's my favorite. So then from the back of that, there's Facebook, and I'm trying to figure out TikTok. If you are one of the maybe 20 people who follow me on TikTok, you probably noticed I'm not so hot at it yet, but I'm gonna learn, and then eventually I'll lean into doing music videos and stuff like that when the budget allows. But it's really just doing, like, these opportunities are so valuable, and playing live as well as much as I can.
There's even some great AI tools for just creating that initial music video, just so you can get it up on YouTube with some really cool graphics in the background till you come to the point of making your own. There's some really good tools, you know, and AI isn't great in the music space. We know that. We know that's an issue. But actually, from a music video point of view, I've seen some brilliant ones up on YouTube, just to give that nice backing to a good song. So look out for that. Let's talk about Decadence, which is the track we're going to play, and let's have a listen, because then I think our listeners get a sense of who you are. Is there a story behind this one?
So Decadence is basically about me deciding to do Tebson and to dive into the solo project. And at the time, I kind of felt like it was indulgent, or I was, I have very supportive parents and very supportive community, but being raised, I guess, maybe in the 90s when record labels really ran the music industry, the idea of having a career in music was not a very, it was a very shaky path. So I was raised with get a real job, keep music as a hobby, like keep doing it, it's awesome, but don't rely on it. And so there's a part of me, even though I have a real job and I'm not, you know, just falling into this, but there's a part of me where it still felt indulgent to spend my money recording my music and putting on shows and doing all of that sort of stuff. And so Decadence is about that, and it's kind of been written from the perspective of, like, you're having an affair with the idea. Like, you know, it's naughty, I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm gonna, and I don't really care what bridges I burn or, like, what I have to give up to do it, because I need to see how it goes.
Brilliant. All right, let's take a listen.
Explore.
like sitting in the studio listening to your song playing?
It's quite surreal, actually.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Yeah, I've had it finished for so long. It's kind of just been my own thing. It's lovely to have it out there and for people to be actually able to listen to it and go, oh, okay, so she has actually been doing something. She's not just going on about it.
Yeah. Now, speaking of surreal, I've just had a message. We're being listened to tonight in Rarotonga.
Yeah, really? So
a big hello to our Rarotongan listeners tuning into a bit of Kick Arts across the ditch. How cool is that?
Hello.
So there we go.
Cool.
You need to download Tebson's song so Tebson can get some good ratings from around the world as quick as possible. Thank you to our friends over in Raro. Love you lots. You've just moved to Auckland from Rotorua?
Yes.
Yeah? Does that sort of help with the music scene a little bit, I guess, more potential for live events, I'm guessing? Or is it actually harder because you've got to kind of now stamp your foot on this busy market?
Probably a bit of both. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm doing this for the lived experience. I'm doing it for the fun of it. I don't have, like, a necessary, like, an agenda of how, I don't know if, many people need to know me or need to listen to me. Obviously, the more the better, because then more people will come watch my live shows, which is what I'm the most passionate about. But there's not a lot happening down there, and there's a lot more up here. There's a lot more people who are living their lives similar to me that I can connect with. And yeah, I'm just really excited to get out and support other artists and what they're doing and watch shows and play music with other people, hopefully.
That's cool. What is the support network like for new musicians? You know, you mentioned you found a publicist that's helping you. You know, are there other people like that you have to sort of have in your toolbox?
Definitely. I think it's hard when you first start and you're naive and you haven't built the connections, or maybe you're not aware of the organisations that are out there to help. But I think in New Zealand, we're really lucky. There's so many organisations that are there to help. There's so many people out there for mentoring. We've got MMF, where you can get mentoring for a very low yearly fee, you know, Independent Music, APRA, and I've used those platforms and the events that they put on and the mentors that they offer to kind of build myself from there. So I work with Katie from Quirky Music and Whitney from Ahua PR, and those are the two I'm working with at the moment. And really fortunate just to have their help and to have been able to find them.
And it's about taking every opportunity, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I guess, you know, you're getting out things like coming on here, I guess, doing those live performances in different spaces. And you've got a live performance coming up. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, I'm playing on Saturday, my first Auckland gig at Move Space. It's going to be a really intimate acoustic show. So it's just me and a guitarist. I've got Raging Flowers and Emma Kate New Love opening for me, which I'm really excited about. So three acoustic singer-songwriters. Move Space is an awesome venue. I haven't performed there before, but I've been there for events, and they're very supportive of many facets of the creative industry in Auckland. So I'm really excited to do that. Tickets are only $10, so, because of course nobody knows me.
So if you
want to come along, it'd be cool. Love to meet some new people.
And how do people book or turn up?
If you look up Tebson on Under the Radar, the tickets are on there.
Fantastic. Under the Radar is becoming bigger and bigger in the music scene for tickets. It's popping up more and more, which is great. Bandcamp, of course, another place. You popping your music up in that space?
Yes, I actually got a message that I need to release Decadence on there. It's still in the pre-order. I forget that you have to manually go on and release it, so I'm sorry to everyone who
it'll be available tomorrow.
Bought my song on there. It's just so amazing. Bandcamp's such an awesome tool for artists as well. Like, it goes a long way towards getting reach in the industry when people purchase on there, so I feel really bad that I've put everybody down that way, but rookie mistake.
Hey, I tell you what, do a TikTok tomorrow of you online releasing it there on there, and
there you
kill both things off at once.
Look at you. I'm actually going to do that.
That'd be
I'll
hilarious.
Tag you in it.
Your other tracks that you're releasing throughout the year, would you say the genre or vibe is similar to Decadence?
Yes. They're all a little bit, they've all got a little bit of different character, but all of them I worked on with the same producer, so there's that flow through. One song is a little bit more of a love song, I suppose, and then my next single kind of navigates me going through the grief of losing somebody that was really close to me. So yeah, they're a little bit different. The next one's a bit darker, it's more dark pop, and then the one after that kind of has that vibe of driving along the ocean on a Sunday afternoon.
Nice.
Yeah.
And when do you hope to launch the EP of all of them?
End of this year. I haven't decided on my exact date yet, but probably around October, November.
Nice. So when you're doing a performance like next Saturday at Move Space, is that a mixture of all of these that are coming? Do we get a sneak peek?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, we do.
You do. Okay. You get all of them plus two unrecorded tracks and a few covers chucked in there as well, but specifically chosen because of how they've influenced my songwriting. Yeah, so it's
and is it you and a guitar or you and a piano?
Guitar. So I have a friend of mine, Ian. He's an amazing guitarist. So he's coming up to play with me because I prefer to tell the story. I think of my voice as my first instrument. I don't particularly like playing and singing live, if I'm honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I get too distracted. I'm thinking too much about what I'm doing when I'm playing. I like to be fully immersed in telling the story and leaning into the emotion of what I'm sharing. So that's kind of what you get. You get the song being told more as a story rather than just being sung, I guess.
It's nice not to try to prove that you can be everything to everybody. You're saying, I want this kind of experience, you're imagining it, and then leaning on other people in the community, which I think works really well in especially Auckland, to be able to show that you want to lean into the community and kind of asking for that support without really asking for it. Can you give an idea of one of the covers that you're going to or is it just totally surprised?
Yeah, not at all. I'm too little for it to be a surprise. So obviously I mentioned before you played Decadence a little bit about that shift from pop music to darker or like pop punk music, and a big band for me was Evanescence. So I do have My Immortal in the set because honestly I think that was the song that pushed me over the cliff and into the grips of the sad girl pop music. I just absolutely enamored with Amy Lee when I was a kid. And yeah, I love that album.
Amazing. And then where to from here? Like if you could say, do you want to keep, you might be looking for some collaborations, like where to then? Like what's the big dream or a next bigger dream?
It's building my audience so that I can play cool live shows, and definitely I would love to do some vocal collaborations, some songwriting with other people, maybe have some of my tracks at some point remixed into different genre, like maybe have one changed into drum and bass or EDM or something like that. Hopefully things get a little bit more chill out in the world. It would be cool to be able to go overseas and play some shows and use my music to be able to travel. I would love that. But yeah, mostly it's just meeting cool people and doing fun things, because I've realized over the past 10 years that's the joy for me of doing this, and it's lifting other people up and having other people lift me up, and yeah. That's what I love. So I don't have like a really clear 5 or 10 year plan. A lot of people say you should. I'm kind of just like go with the flow. I would like to grow my audience and hopefully get booked for some fun stuff.
That's amazing. Is there an event or a festival around the world that you say this is it? Like I want to, play here.
There's a few, obviously you've got big festivals like Glastonbury that I was enamored with as a child, and I would love to be able to play that, or even like Szeged one of the biggest festivals in Europe. Things like that would be really cool to tick off the bucket list, because I'd love to go as a punter, but to be able to go and play would be absolutely fabulous. Yeah.
That's great. There's so many great festivals all over the world that it's like sky's the limit, and different kinds of festivals too. Like, I know that this is not a good idea, but you know, we had the gal
Naked in the Trees.
I love that festival.
Do you?
Yeah.
But there's like so many opportunities to, like, even Renaissance fairs, like, you know, like all kinds of different experiences to bring music, that it's just, you know, you don't have to, we don't have, it's not a one size fits all or a one, you know, a one way to, you know, make success. That's what I like about it. I mean, even cruise ships, I would always tell Stephen, I was like, I'd love to live on a cruise ship.
Oh yeah, of course. There's lots of music on there. Yeah, niche festivals are grand. I love them, especially when they're smaller and it's almost like more connective, I feel. I love going to smaller festivals, and we have some awesome ones in New Zealand. There was Morph Festival just happened this weekend as well, which is a brand new festival that I was hoping to get to but didn't make it to. You know, there's just always something happening.
Right. And your friend who gave you that punk music, like, way back when, is there, like, if you're not still in touch with them, is there something that you would like say to them to be like, this is what I did with it?
We're still in touch, so she knows.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I guess, yes, she knows that it had a huge effect on me. I mean, she watched me go through the changes, and then I haven't seen her for a couple of years. The last time I saw her was actually at one of my band's gigs. But I mean, I have the lyrics from one of those Jimmy Eat World songs tatted on my arm. So,
yeah. Nice.
Very, it very much affected me. And I think it made my understanding of lyrics, or like my interest in really going out of my way to use language to tell a story, and how you can say three paragraphs in one sentence in a song has always fascinated me. And often that kind of emo pop punk, I mean, every genre does it, but they really lean into that, and they lean into some really cool words and things. So it got my vocabulary a little bit more open in terms of songwriting. So yeah, I'm definitely very grateful to her. You know, even though I know she was 100% judging me.
That's okay. Sometimes it's like people can see things for, you know, for me that I don't necessarily know, and I appreciate that.
100%.
I don't want to be a, you know, an island on my own.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, I'd rather have someone go, hey, check this out, I think you'll like it. Yeah. Check it out and go, hey, it's not for me, but at least I know, rather than just being stuck in, like, stagnant in who I am.
Mm.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, where can people find you, follow you, all of those important things? Obviously not TikTok, tell us those other places.
Well, you can on TikTok, but it's not as fun. On Instagram, I'm at @Tebson_, and then Tebson on Facebook. On TikTok, I am at @Tebson_. There's a lot of people who use Tebson, which is quite fascinating.
Give it back. Yeah.
I know, right? So I don't have a really straightforward one. I don't have a website yet, but that's in the works.
That's cool. And we'll look forward to playing your songs as you release them throughout the year, and maybe towards the end of the year, let's catch up and sort of check in with where it's gone. Tell Whitney to keep sending them to us.
That would be amazing. I really appreciate that.
That's cool. And head to Under the Radar. The Move Space is at 473 Dominion Road. It's a great space. Looking on there, man, they do all sorts of cool things.
Yeah.
It's a really cool place just to go and check out, Dominion Road, and that's next Saturday, so head to Under the Radar. Thanks so much for coming in and chatting. We'll be excited to see where this journey takes you, and welcome to Auckland.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to be here.
We'll look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Now, I've got a big question for you, Kristen. Do you like Alanis Morissette?
Of course I do.
Wow, Jagged Little Pearl, the fabulous musical that uses all her music, is finally coming to New Zealand, being produced by our very own Bravi Theatre Company at Sky City Theatre later this year, just announced yesterday. How cool is that?
It's going to be awesome. That is a solid album with so many good, meaningful songs meant a lot to me when it came out. Very influential.
Tipton's still here. You are Alanis Morissette in the mix there somewhere?
Oh, yeah. I love her. She's amazing. I wish I could be as good a songwriter as she is. Oh, my God.
She is
amazing.
I bet you are amazing.
Let's take a listen to You Learn, which is from the stage show.
You wait and see.
Jagged Little Pill coming to Sky City, Bravi Theatre Company, a little later this year. We'll keep you posted on that. Now, a few quick bulletins that have come in from the theatre list. It's all sort of coming soon as we're heading into the school holiday. So there's a little bit of quietness over the Easter weekend. But, of course, we have got The Worm that we have had on the show playing at Te Pō in Waitakere from the 8th to the 11th of April, then heading to the Pump House from the 14th to the 19th before the Māngere Arts Centre on the 25th. Head to nightsong.co.nz for your tickets. And Juliet kicks off on the 9th of April. We'll all be there to support it. And that's running through to the 3rd of May, and that is at the Civic Theatre, and that's the writers from Schitt's Creek, so you're in for a good night out. Head to ticketmaster.co.nz. Our dear friend Emma Wiz, Stage Antics Bad Jelly the Witch is on at the Pump House from the 9th of April to Saturday the 11th. A great school holiday show. Head to pumphouse.co.nz for all the details, and don't forget to jump on thearts.co.nz so you can support her in her boosted page. A View from the Bridge, Silo Theatre, is kicking off from the 9th of April, and head to silotheatre.co.nz. But I've run out of time, so I'm going to play our final song. Thank you, Kristen, for filling in. Emma's back next week, but then you're here in the hot seat for a few weeks.
Oh, my pleasure. We'll
look forward to catching up. Sophie Toyne has released a song, Every Little Moment, a heartfelt reflection on how when you're a child, the smallest things can mean the most. Now, she is just 16 years of age and is an emerging New Zealand artist whose voice carries a rare mix of softness, strength, and emotional depth. So let's go out with Every Little Moment. Have a fabulous week, and make sure you
kick some arts. Things I wanna say.
deep and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Good night.
Auckland Council has a goal of zero waste to landfill by 2040. That means recycling, composting, reusing and repurposing materials. Here's another zero waste tip on Planet FM. Here's a tip on using your food scraps bin properly. Be sure to use Auckland Council's pink caddy liners or paper bags to collect food scraps. To reduce odours, empty your kitchen caddy every 2 to 3 days. Store your kitchen caddy under the sink and keep your curbside bin in the shade between collections. A total of 147,000 tonnes was saved from landfill services in 2024. Find out all the info at wastenothing.co.nz.
Hello, kia ora my friend. I'm Susie Cato, inviting you to join me for New Zealand's favourite kids show on Planet FM. It's called Susie and Friends, and there's songs, stories and prizes, jokes, reviews, birthdays and shout-outs. And kids just like you. Go to susie.co.nz for more information. I'd love you to be a friend. Just listen to the radio Sunday afternoons at 3:15 for Susie and Friends on Planet FM 104.6. Susie and Friends!